insane. Not so much because it admits the abnormal, as because it cannot recover the normal.
Chesterton said that we cannot recover the normal because we have created a culture that is at war with the older culture of Christendom. We are caught up in a modern craze for scientific officialism and strict social organization. And the problem with official scientists is that they become steadily less scientific and more official. Hello, I'm Dale Ahlquist, and welcome to the Apostle of Common Sense, a series of programs where we explore the words and wisdom of the great English writer G.K. Chesterton. The book Eugenics and Other Evils was published in 1922, but Chesterton had written most of it 10 years earlier. He was hoping there would be no need to publish such a book and that he could just throw his notes into the fire. Instead, he found out that the issue had not gone away, nor had any of his arguments gone out of date. Unfortunately, this book has still not gone out of date. Chesterton's arguments remain as valid as ever. We are still faced with what he calls the same stuffy science, the same bullying bureaucracy, and the same terrorism by 10th-rate professors. Think about those words, bullying, terrorism, 10th-rate professors. Our friend G.K. Chesterton could be a very funny man, but he was also not afraid to show his anger. The book is perhaps a prime example of his anger. The book is not dated, in spite of the fact that the term eugenics is dated. So before we examine Chesterton's book, some background information is in order. The term eugenics was coined in the 19th century by an Englishman named Francis Galton. He advocated the betterment of mankind. Sounds good. He wanted to improve the physical and mental makeup of human beings. Sounds good. How did he intend to accomplish this? By increasing the proportion of those people with superior genetic endowment. Sounds suspicious. How did he envision increasing the proportion of people with superior genetic endowment? By selective breeding. Sounds a little terrifying. Also sounds a little familiar. Where did he get his ideas? This will sound very familiar. He got his ideas from his cousin, Charles Darwin. Galton not only gave credit to Darwin for his own ideas about eugenics, but Darwin repaid the favor by referring to Galton's ideas about human breeding in his book, The Descent of Man. Darwin called Galton's work admirable and agreed with him that the inferior members of society should not marry because they might supplant the better members of society. There were many advocates of eugenics here in America, but probably the most prominent was the woman who became the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger is hailed by some today as a pioneer defender of women's rights. Perhaps more than any other person in the 20th century, she's responsible for the widespread distribution of contraceptives and the mundane acceptance of birth control. What is less known about her is that her motives for advocating birth control had less to do with sexual freedom than with eugenics. Anyone who doubts this simply has to read the journal which she founded and edited for many years, the Birth Control Review. In 1919, she proclaimed in the review, "More children for the fit, less for the unfit." By fit, she meant the privileged, the brainy, and the white, people like herself. She wanted to use birth control to create a race of thoroughbreds. By unfit, she meant not only the physically handicapped and the mentally retarded, but also, specifically, Hebrews, Slavs, Catholics, and Negroes. She targeted these groups as threats because of their increasing numbers. She worked hard to set up most of her birth control clinics in urban neighborhoods populated by these groups. She openly suggested that parents should apply to have babies as immigrants have to apply for visas. Margaret Sanger was also a member of the American Eugenics Society, which successfully lobbied for sterilization laws that targeted society's undesirables and unwanted. These laws were passed in more than half the states in the U.S. and led to several cases of forced sterilization. Why don't we hear of this connection between Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and eugenics? In case you haven't already figured it out, there was another famous person who advocated eugenics, Adolf Hitler. He did more than just lobby for eugenics, he officially instituted it. He led an entire country in carrying out its principles, not only to breed what he believed to be a superior race, but to eliminate everyone whom he considered to be inferior. And where did Hitler find plenty of support for his eugenic ideas? From Margaret Sanger and her circle. Eugenic scientists from Nazi Germany wrote articles for Sanger's Birth Control Review, and members of Sanger's American Birth Control League visited Nazi Germany, sat in on sessions of the Supreme Eugenics Court, and returned with glowing reports of how the sterilization law was weeding out the worst strains in the Germanic stock in a scientific and truly humanitarian way. Needless to say, after World War II, when the terrible truth about Nazi Germany came out, when the world learned of the horrors of the Holocaust and the death camps, the term eugenics was utterly discredited. Margaret Sanger was quick to distance herself from eugenics and began to emphasize birth control as a merely feminist issue. Now we don't hear about eugenics at all anymore. But unfortunately, the philosophy behind eugenics is with us still. Generally speaking, all of the original arguments in favor of eugenics have become the exact same arguments in favor of birth control, abortion, and euthanasia. Chesterton understood this, but he understood it in 1910. As with so many other things, Chesterton saw exactly what we see, only he saw it long before it happened. The very title, Eugenics and Other Evils, obviously implies that eugenics is an evil, and one connected to other evils. But when Chesterton attacks something that is evil, his attack is always wrapped around a defense of what is good. Chesterton warned that we have lost sight of what is good. We've even lost sight of what is normal. We've lost our common sense. What is normal is this. A man and woman fall in love, get married, and have a family. For thousands of years, men and women have been able to figure this normal thing out for themselves. This basic human freedom was part of the common experience. The early proponents of eugenics defied this common sense by saying that men and women should not marry for love, but rather for good breeding. They said people should not risk having children who might be handicapped or ill or weak. In other words, says Chesterton, they should not risk having children who turn out to be John Keats or Robert Louis Stevenson. In a chilling prophecy of the abortion mentality, Chesterton says that the eugenicists have an attitude towards the unborn child that was, in every other age, unthinkable. They seek his life in order to take it away. They also have precisely the wrong idea of the purpose of medicine.
We call in the doctor to save us from death, and since death is admittedly an evil, the doctor has the right to administer the strangest pill, which he may think is a cure for all such menaces of death. But he has not the right to administer death as the cure for all human ills.
The normal person has always known that preventing the birth of a baby is a highly unnatural act, no matter how it is done. But it is made to sound harmless and even sensible when it is called eugenic, or when it is called birth control, or when it is called reproductive freedom. But anyone who cannot see the real evil behind such terms is what Chesterton calls a splendid dupe.
Evil always takes advantage of ambiguity. Evil always wins through the strength of its splendid dupes. and there has in all ages been a disastrous alliance between abnormal innocence and abnormal sin.
The only way to explain what happened in Nazi Germany is that evil won through the strength of its splendid dupes. Too many people thought they were doing a good thing because they believed a lie. A lie that sounded good because it was called patriotic and was supported by scientific officialism in the regime. It is also the only way to explain what has happened in this country for the last three decades. Millions of people have believed an incredibly evil lie. A lie that sounds good because it is called choice. A lie that sounds even better when it has scientific officialism behind it. Two University of Chicago economists recently published a study that showed that the reduction in crime rates in the 1990s can be linked to the legalization of abortion in the 1970s. You see, the women who would have given birth to criminals instead had abortions, so we had fewer criminals on the street. There you go, a new kind of crime prevention, preventing criminals from being born. Never mind the grotesque implications of these conclusions, including the overt racism. The experts have shown a statistical link between lower crime rates and higher abortion rates. Statistics. In a 1905 column in the Illustrated London News, Chesterton gave us some guidance about statistics.
It is an error to suppose that statistics are merely untrue. They are also wicked. As used today, they serve the purpose of making masses of men feel helpless and cowardly. But I have another quarrel with statistics. I believe that even if they are technically correct, they can be entirely misleading. When we hear what we are told are real scientific statistics, it is psychologically impossible not to think that they mean something. Generally, they mean nothing. Sometimes, they even mean something that isn't true.
Let's go back, way back to Darwin's cousin, Francis Galton, the man who gave us the term eugenics. Before Galton wrote about breeding geniuses, he was famous for something else. He was considered a pioneer in the study of statistics. He would be pleased by his legacy. Lying by numbers is as elementary as painting by numbers. When organizations such as Planned Parenthood and the United Nations Population Fund spread their gospel of contraception throughout the world, the main scare tactic they use is numbers. They use statistics about poverty. They use statistics to show that poor people will have lots of babies who will also be poor, which will increase poverty. So naturally, the only way to prevent more poverty is to prevent poor people from having children. Chesterton predicted exactly what would happen if the eugenics mentality was allowed to take hold. It would mean an attack on the poorest and most helpless in society. Obviously, abortion attacks the most defenseless of all people, the babies. But the international politics of birth control preys on the poor and the underprivileged throughout the world, forcing them to accept birth control in exchange for their basic needs. Chesterton was right in his prediction, and since he was right, it might do us well to look at where he placed the blame for this tragic set of events. This is where we get into the other evils. Sometimes it's too easy to demonize abortionists and feminists and advocates of birth control. Even though they must be actively opposed, and Chesterton did oppose them, he would argue that they are not the main players. There's a much bigger problem that must be dealt with. There's a much greater evil that must be eliminated. The fact that babies are unwanted goes back to the fact that our society has created a whole class of people that are unwanted. Chesterton says these people have been utterly exploited, used like tools, and used up like tools. They are permanently poor. They have no hopes of getting property, of getting enough capital to support themselves or a family. Chesterton also understands clearly that the situation is aggravated by the fact that sexual pleasures are often the only ones the poor can obtain, and so they are disproportionately pursued. Then, the privileged class, which has so benefited from capitalism as at the expense of the underprivileged class, has a drastic solution. Poor people should not have babies. We don't like to think about this. Our society does not like to face the problems of injustice because it usually interferes with business. Chesterton says, "Prosperity does not favor self-examination."
The average businessman began to be agnostic, not so much because he did not know where he was, as because he wanted to forget. Many of the rich took to skepticism, exactly as the poor took to drink, because it was a way out. The modern world laments the breaking of the tools of mammon much more than the breaking of the images of God. No one seems able to imagine capitalist industrialism being sacrificed to any other object. That is because people miss the main thing and concentrate on the minor thing. They treat modern conditions as fixed, though the very word modern implies that they are fugitive. They treat old ideas as impossible, though their very antiquity often proves their permanence. They have the universal, unconscious assumption that life and sex must live by the laws of business or industrialism, and not vice versa. The rich, using social science, supported by their wealth, tried an inhuman experiment. The experiment has entirely failed. They sought to make wealth accumulate, and in the process they made men decay. Instead of confessing the error and trying to restore wealth to the many, or attempting to repair the decay, they are trying to cover up their first cruel experiment with an even more cruel experiment.
Now, the evil of big business has a twin sister, the evil of big government. When government tries to right the wrongs created by capitalism, it creates an even worse mess. The idea of socialism may sound good, to provide houses and food for everyone. However, in order to carry this out, state officials would have to inspect houses and regulate meals. But as Chesterton points out, the state has found that it's easier to provide the building inspectors without providing the builders, and easier to restrict the diet without providing the dinner. We have simply added the bureaucratic tyrannies of the socialist state to the plutocratic tyrannies of the capitalist state. The result is a loss of liberty and an assault on the common man. Everything is regulated with the excuse that the health of the community is being protected.
Nothing will escape the official. If he is to control the health of the community, why, he must necessarily control all of the habits of all the citizens, including their habits in the matter of sex. Then the most private matters will come under public scrutiny. When a man's personal health is a public concern, his most private acts become public acts.
When the state starts meddling with our primary habits, or as Chesterton says, when all law begins, so to speak, next to the skin or nearest to the vitals, then it is obvious that the laws will soon assault marriage and motherhood. We find ourselves in this condition because we have lost our perspective. Chesterton says we have forgotten the first things.
The first things must be the very fountains of life, love, and birth, and babyhood. And these are always covered fountains, flowing in the quiet courts of the home.
The home and the family must be protected. It was an industrialist and materialist society, says Chesterton, that has been responsible for producing so many unhappy marriages because it produced so many unhappy men. But all the government reforms have been aimed at rescuing the industrialism and the materialism rather than rescuing the happiness. We've sacrificed the ancient uses of things because they do not fit in with the modern abuses. The point about eugenics and the other evils that sprang from it is that it proposes to eliminate poverty simply by eliminating people. Chesterton's solution is not as simple, but it is the right one. The way to eliminate poor people is to eliminate their poverty so that they are not poor anymore, but are still people. They deserve enough property and capital and liberty so they can keep their families and their dignity. They are the image of God, and they must not be broken. I'm Dale Ahlquist. Join us again on the Apostle of Common Sense.